listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kolula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Nikki Kolula. We're going to jump right into this episode. We have a very good friend of mine indeed. You're going to hear a lot of jokes, a lot of good bluesy licks, a lot of good songs. Mr. Travis Stevenson, how are you, man?
I'm doing great, man. Thanks for having me. How are you?
Good to have you, man. And I'm good. And I see you on a Marshall. What is that, a Marshall half stack? No, that's not on a half stack.
That is a 100-watt super lead, a plexi, sitting on a 212 Mesa Boogie cab with a white fender strap.
Yes, man. Perfectly.
Yeah, man.
You just leave it out like that all the time?
It's usually on the other side of the room, but I set it back there.
Just to look cool. I knew it. I was like, it's got to look cool. It's got to look like a guitar player's room. It's got to look like I'm just about to pick it up and play it. No, I always ask if people leave their guitars out to play. Oh, we lost you, Travis. Where are you? Are you there? We lost you there for a second, dude.
Sorry, yeah, somebody, I got a phone call. Somebody called me.
Man, dude, you got to cut that out, bro.
I can't go airplane mode.
I know. We make a difference. Well, you know what? We're just going to hope that nobody calls you between now and the end of the interview, dude. All right. We'll cross our fingers. So tell me what you're working on now. Are you writing new tunes? We're going to show some of your records and songs and videos, but tell me what you're working on right this minute.
Well, right this minute, I have a whole new album written for my trio. Or, you know, it's sometimes a trio, sometimes a quartet, depending on if we have a keyboard player. There's keys on a lot of our albums, so.
Oh, that's cool.
But we play as a trio. That's Electric Soul Parade. So there's a new album. I got 8 new songs written.
And mixed it too, right? They're mixed, mastered, everything's finished.
No, that's the previous one. That one's called Rock and Roll Messiah, and that one's not out yet. I released a few singles from that album, and that album is mixed. It's on tape. It's not mastered. The next thing that I want to do is master that for vinyl and put out the whole record on vinyl. Just basically like the hold up with that is just the funds, you know. I got to get the funds to, what's that?
Vinyl's expensive. It just is a pain in the ass.
Yeah, and it's, I'm an independent artist, so I do things one step at a time as I can. So from that album, I've released 3 singles, one of which is a video that I sent you. So we'll maybe watch that. We've released 3 singles. So,
you know, it's funny because I had a friend, her name's Allie Handel. She, you know, Allie.
I know Allie.
So she came over today because she wanted to check her vinyl test pressings on my system. She's like, I want to come by and listen to it on a good system, and so we did. We went through, and it was crazy because we listened to like 3 different pressings, because she's like listening for like the crackles and the pops that are just just a part of vinyl, but like sometimes they were in the songs depending on who made the master lacquer and then who made the, you know, the transfer onto whatever it is. And it's like, it's just such a process. Like vinyl is such a beautiful process. But that part of the process is also like, you can pull your hair out a little bit. Because she was like, I'm hearing a little crackling. I'm like, that's just part of vinyl. Like, it's just, but then there were parts where there was crackling in the songs. It's like, oh, that shouldn't be happening. You should crackle in the song. You know what I mean? So it's just part of the process of an artist trying to like put out something great, and then you just don't know what you're going to get when you have all these different variables and different people working on it, you know? So process. So you'll get into that when you're about to do the pressing. But I was telling her, I was like, it was such a, it's such an amazing experience to have a vinyl, because it's big. It's like so cool to have something tangible, like a big record to play. And then there's times where I'm like, I don't know if I'd do it again because of how expensive it is. And like, how the return is, like, there's not that many people that are listening to vinyl, but I listen to vinyl all the time, you know? And the other thing is, like, you know, we were talking about the crackles and stuff, and I'm like, you know, the shitty thing is most people that are listening to vinyls aren't listening to it on a system like this. They're just going to listen on, like, a little record player, and they don't have it all souped up. And it's like, that's also a weird thing, because that never used to happen in the 70s. Everybody had sound systems. Everybody had great speakers. Everybody had these awesome preamps. It was just a part of like a family setup. Like, you'd have a system passed down to you, or that's what it was. You know what I mean? So yeah,
it's like everyone today has an iPhone.
Yeah. And it's just crazy to me. Like, you can't listen to music like that. You just can't, you know? So, you know, it's one of those things. I wanted to ask you a random question. When you listen to a vinyl, do you go, do you like make it a process? Like, do you kind of put on cool lighting? Do you do, because like, I was like, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it like I listen to a vinyl. So I put my black light on, I put a little disco light on, I put all these like cool lights on, lava lamps, stuff like that. And she's like, you're like a college kid hippie. And I'm like, that's how I listen to records. Like, it just takes you back to that. So do you do anything that's like ceremonial when you listen to a record?
Yeah, I have, I don't have any crazy psychedelic lighting like that, but I do have like some ambient lighting, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like to smoke a little herb, man.
There you go. And
kick my feet up and make the low lighting, you know? And it's just like a soft, moody lighting, you know? Yeah. It's not any kind of black light or anything like that. But yeah, that's how I listen.
I'm like an old, I think I am like a college kid a little bit. I mean, I have glow in the dark stars on my ceiling. I have a black light, and it's like, that's what I had like pretty much in college. So it's like, I never outgrew that. When it came to listening to records, that was some of the best listening experiences I had listening to music. So I like to tap back into that. And it's like, when people show me music, like, hey man, I want to show you a song, and they lift up their self, and I'm like, oh, dude, no, don't, at least send it to me. I'll listen to it on monitors or something. Like,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I know you know what I mean, because you listen to
my. No, 100%, dude, I'm the same way. Like, you don't get the vibe of the song on a phone.
Oh.
You don't hear any bass. You don't hear any kick drum, maybe, but all you hear is high end, highs and mids, you know?
It's like, yes.
At least like a decent car stereo where I can get an idea of how the song sounds.
Yes. And I also feel like, you spend all this money on these phones. How can the microphones or the speakers be so ridiculously cheap? It's like, they've got to change that, because if the phone is the new medium, we got to get some of that 70s logic like into like what we're listening to and how the experience is, because cell phones are just not it. And Bluetooth too. It's like, man, I love Bluetooth for the convenience. It's amazing for the convenience, but it's like not where it's at when it comes to like listening. You have to have wires. You have to have sound good, and people don't understand the difference. So like, oh yeah, I mean, it's not really like, it doesn't look good. And it's like, I don't care about that. I want to hear it. I want it to be as good as it can be, because the records that changed my life were on great sound systems. And it was like, man, that was it, you know? So, but I love that you're making the effort. You record it on analog tape, you're going to master it, and you're going to present it on vinyl. Are you going to make CDs or just do digital streaming? Like, how are you going to approach that? Because that's been the
big. I don't know, man. I haven't decided yet.
I wouldn't do.
I don't know if it's really.
I don't think it's worth it. I don't think CDs are worth it anymore. I don't think many people have players. But I mean, it's weird because I do love vinyl so much, but I don't know if I could release like 3 and 4 records on vinyl. Like, it just is so, I don't have the storage for it. I mean, that's the other part is like, man, I have to put some of this stuff in my parents' like pool house and then put half the boxes in my house. It's like, dude, I can't do this for every record, you know? So it has to be a special reason to make a vinyl. And I know you feel the same because it's costly and all that. But how long did the whole record, the Rock and Roll Messiah record, take from start to finish?
A year and a half.
Wow.
You know, but which was way longer than it should have taken. I mean, that's the whole time. The amount of time that I spent in the studio was definitely less than that. I mean, it could have been compacted into 6 months or something, but you remember we had a bunch of gear problems. The tape machine broke for like months. Yeah. We were waiting 3-4 months to get the tape machine fixed one time. So that's kind of what slowed it down, dude. But I mean, all the recording, we did drums and bass in 2 days.
Wow.
All 8 songs. I did all my guitar parts in about 2 to 3 days.
Wow.
We did keys in 1 day. So like the time we spent recording it
was fast. You know,
was fast. Yeah. And then I did vocals over a period of time, but I never spent like more than a day on one song.
Yeah.
You know, I try to get a take, you know, like a good take. And then if there's maybe 1 or 2 lines I want to fix, you know, I go back and fix that. But I don't like comping and like trying to get, you know, every word and every line. Plus, if we're recording on tape, like it's a limited ability to do that, you know. So, yeah, the time we spent recording it wasn't long at all. It was just like we did have some gear problems that slowed the process down.
I do 2 songs vocally in a day, but guitars, man, I will spend time on guitars. Like I will spend on one, I would say maybe I would do 2 to 3 songs of guitar a day. Like I would, it's not fast for me. Like guitar, like I almost overthink a lot of stuff when it comes to guitar for a record because I don't dial in my sound live as much as I probably should. But for a record, man, I've dialed in the sound because it's like, okay, once it's there, that's it. It's like, you cannot change anything and that it's going to live there forever. So when you're dialing in guitar sounds, this is like a gear question for me. Like, do you kind of know what you want in the studio? Do you know what you want to hear guitar-wise in the studio, how you want it to sound back? Do you go to the control room? Do you track in the control room and kind of sit?
Yeah, I like to put 412 cabs in the main room.
Wow.
And then run the head, like whatever amp I'm using, which I use this Super Lead for the whole album. And I use a few different cabs. Yeah, and I like to have the amp in the control room, and then, you know, that way you're not in the room with a 100-watt Super Lead.
Right. But it is a great sound. Like, you know, there is a thing, especially Doug's old room. I remember I brought, like, my favorite sound is I brought a Twin and a Vox AC30, put them in stereo, and just cranked them, dude. Like, just cranked them. So, like, if somebody walked, like, if somebody opened the door, that was always the best feeling because you would just hear the guitars just blasting through the walls. And it was like, okay, yeah, this is gonna sound great. But in the control room, it's, like, manageable and listenable on a level that you're like, oh, yeah, this sounds cool. But, like, it you know that feeling when it's just cranked. What did it sound like with 412s? That must have been, like taking the roof off the building, literally.
Yeah, it was loud, dude. No, I had two 412 cabinets.
Oh, two. Okay.
Yeah, so, you know.
Yep.
You got 8 12-inch speakers. Yeah, it was loud as fuck, dude. And we just put one dynamic mic on each cab and then kind of blend, you know, those cabs. So you have different speakers, so you get a different kind of they accentuate different frequencies. You know, one cab had vintage 30s and one cab had greenbacks. So cool. The greenbacks are a little sweeter, a little more smooth, nice, really like warm mid-range. And the vintage 30s are brighter and more edgy, more modern sounding. So, we just did that and then kind of like mix them in together. And I pretty much have a good idea of what I want to get when I go in. I don't know. I also like to leave a little room for the experimentation.
Have you heard any of the folklore with the AC/DC, like, miking of the amps? I've heard that for, like, Back in Black or some of those big AC/DC songs, they would mic the wall, like, they would put the amp, like, out of window and mic the wall. Like, it would be, like, a very odd thing of, like, how they would mic it. They wouldn't mic it conventionally. But I've heard all these, like, folklore things that in my mind, I'm like, that doesn't make sense. There's no way. This has got to be, like, rock and roll voodoo, like, myth stuff, because it just doesn't make sense when I think and I hear what they sound like. Have you heard anything, especially with AC/DC or Zeppelin, how they mic'd their amp that you think is maybe bogus, or you're like, nah, there's no way?
Well, I did hear a story about the band Montrose from that song Rock Candy, which was like one of their biggest song, I think, in the mid-70s. And Doug told me this because they borrowed his Marshall Plexi and they used that for that recording. But he said they faced the amp towards the window of the studio, and it was, and then they put a mic behind it, like a few feet behind it, and that's how they mic'd it. But if you listen to it, it's got a lot of room sound, you know, and the amp is all the way up. It's, you know, loud as ever living fuck in the room. But that's how he said they mic'd that. So it's definitely unconventional with it, like the speaker facing away from the mic, you know.
So it was turned around?
Yeah, so it was the actual amp and the speakers were facing the window of the control room, and then behind the amp they put the mic.
That's, I've heard the same kind of story with AC/DC, and they did two. They did one where it was like facing a wall and they mic'd it behind it, and then one where they put it up in a window and mic'd the wall below the amp. But it just doesn't make sense. Like there's no way it would sound, I don't know, it just doesn't sound like you'd get the sound of a guitar amp out of that. You know what I mean?
I don't know, dude. It might be folklore. It might be, there might be something to it. I did read an article about Eric Johnson when he was recording. I forget what album, but they said they did three mics on his cab. They put one like right on the cab, and they put one like say 15 feet back, and then another one like 25 or 30 feet back. And then they mix those into the sound, so you get
sound like epic, like a stadium sound almost.
Well, like a big room sound, but you also get like several milliseconds of delay,
right,
in between those different mics. So it's like a really, I think, a wide sound. You know,
never but, trying. Like it's like I always feel like when it comes to miking a guitar or a guitar amp, it's like it's whatever the engineer's used to usually, and I mean, a lot of these bands also had crazy budgets, whereas, like, you know, like, I don't have that kind of budgets. Like, I got to go in there and make sure I get a guitar sound. Like, it's just like, I can't spend 3 weeks on if this guitar riff is going to sound good against a wall or a window. But I mean, there is something about these record labels just throwing money at these bands where they had time to experiment, because some of those guitar sounds are epic and they're just so great. So it's like, I always just wonder what folklore there is with all that stuff and, you know, like what it is. But let's play something. What do we want to play first?
Play Make Up Your Mind. It's the first single off of the album that's not released yet, Rock and Roll Messiah. And it's the only one that I've done a video for. But it's a pretty upbeat rocking tune.
Sweet. Here's Electric Soul Parade with Make Up Your Mind. That's ass kicking rock and roll right there, man. Dude, that is a killer tune. Killer guitar.
Thanks, brother.
Just sounded awesome, man. Just awesome. Where did you find that location? It's so cool. You always find like these cool locations to do videos. It's awesome.
What's one of these sites where there's all of these, I forget the name of the sites. There's a several of them where it's kind of like a Craigslist for places to shoot video.
Awesome.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I can't think of the names of them right now. Oh, is it Pure Space?
Maybe.
Is one of them? Yeah. I think Pure Space is one of them. Yeah, but it's like a Craigslist and they just have all of these different, you know, places for rent to shoot. And yeah, I found like all of the videos that I've shot, I've just found on those sites, you know, so.
Awesome. I mean, and so you just load in like you're going to a gig, but you're just going to shoot a video at some random spot?
Yeah. You can rent it by the hour. And then, you know, I'm at the backline place. So like for that, to make it easy, I just, you know, borrowed a drum set. I put dummy heads on it, so or quiet heads, you know, so you don't hear the drums. So you don't have to be super loud, you know.
Of your drummer a little crazy though, because he probably wanted to hear his drums, but he was not hearing his drums. you should do that as like a funny reel. You know what I mean? Like take the studio track and then have like a video of him just doo, 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 you know what I mean? That would be awesome, dude. That would be pretty classic. I think I may do that for a video now because I think that's one of the funniest things to do. No, that's amazing. And how many takes did you have to do and like how long did it take you to shoot the video?
You know, I usually try to knock them out pretty quick, man. And I got a videographer who's done all of the videos, Tyler Forrest.
Yeah, he's and great.
He's great, man. Usually 5-6 hours, you know, at the most, we can knock it out. And so we do, you know, full band play through everyone's playing. And then you do individual shots where it's just me and he's getting close ups of me and my hands. And then he goes to the bass, gets close up of the bass and close up of the drums. And then, you know, there's not really any kind of B roll. It's just us playing the tune, you know. And then he put in the kind of weird spinning and the color and made it a little artistic and maybe a little psychedelic or whatever. But yeah, I mean, we don't spend a lot of time shooting on it. I mean, like I said, 4-6 hours at the most.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I don't love shooting music videos. I don't know why. It's just like photo shoots and videos. They're not like gigs. It's like a gig. I'm going to get a little bit of playing in. I'm going to get a little feedback. But it's like those things. It's like you have to do them. They're important to do. But you don't get anything in the moment of like getting that return. Until you see it and you're like, oh, this is cool. But like, yeah. You know what I mean? It's like, it's just a very artificial but weird thing, but it's also integral for where our music careers are and also like what the mediums that people enjoy music are from. You know what I mean? So it's weird. Like I always think about that for photo shoots and videos. I'm like, it's not necessarily that I'm not bored by them. But I feel like, oh, it's like, okay, this is going to be like a process that's going to be grueling, but the return is going to happen months later when you get the video back and you're like, holy shit, this looks so cool. Did any of the musicians feel the same? Like, oh man, this is okay, let's play the song again. Like, even though you're not trying.
Yeah. I mean, I enjoy it, man. I think to me, it's all a part of like, the artistic picture that I'm trying to paint.
Right.
You know, so the way that it's presented and it's pretty straightforward, you know, it's rock and roll. Like the songs are produced pretty straightforward. There's not a lot of frills. And so that's the way the video comes across. It's just, you know, I think it's well done, but no, I think it's cool, man. I enjoy them, you know,
I feel like so. I'm, the next one, I want to actually have like fun with it, meaning like I want it to be a little bit humorous. So I feel like music videos are very serious, and maybe that's why I just like photo shoots are serious, like videos, because it's like you're going into like get something done, you want it to look cool, and looking cool is not looking funny, you know what I mean? But
yeah,
I think I have the most fun when I'm laughing, you know what I mean? So it's like I feel like now I want to make funny music videos on some level that are also musically cool, but there's like this fine line, you know what I mean? So it's like I've had concepts and things that I'm like thinking about for the next one, but it's like so hard to kind of figure out like how to do it in a way that's going to look cool and translate for the song, but also be a cool and fun music video experience. You know what I mean? The last one I did for, I think it was Fade Away on the Santa Monica Pier. And it was such a fun experience because there were so many dancers. There were so many people. There were silk aerialists. There were people like strangers. There were like, you had all this like energy just kind of like with people on the Santa Monica Pier, which I loved. But like now I'm like, okay, I've got to do a music video where it's like you're in a controlled environment. So it's going to be cameras in a place doing the thing, and that's what it is. And it's got to be cool. And that part of it makes me go, man, that's a photo shoot, you know, where it's like you have to have a controlled environment. And that's – do your musicians feel this way? Because my musicians, I know I have to get them in and out in like 2 hours. Otherwise, it's going to be a grumble fest.
I try to respect their time. They've never complained, okay. You know. I don't know how they feel. I just try to do the same thing. Like I try to, you know, make it as cool as possible. Like I'll bring some booze. I'll bring some food, you know. Right. I try to make it like bam, 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 shoot them and get them out of there. And then they can shoot me last, right. You know.
Right.
And I don't mind hanging around. So I've never had anyone complain, you know, about any kind of thing like that. They're cool with it, you know. So, but I also try to make it as like fun and painless as possible. Like I bring all the gear, you right. know.
Right.
That helps. Backline company. Yeah. So they just basically got to show up, and you know, sip on a drink and play like they play the song for a couple of times, and then it's pretty painless, you know.
Yeah, I feel like my guys are always doing another gig, so it's like they make sure that it's like, okay, can we make it 3 hours and we're out, you know. It's like, and it's understandable, totally understandable, but I do feel like that part of the process, I'm like, I want to enjoy it more, but it's not, I just enjoy music, like I just want to play music, like that's the most important and most fun part of this to me. So the photos and the videos, they're so necessary, but I don't have the same amount of like, yeah, dude, a photo shoot, or you know, it's like, it's just not the same, because it's like, okay, I gotta be focused, and it's not on music. It's like, I gotta be focused on like how it looks and lighting. And it's like, there are parts of the process, I'm sure you went through this, where it's like, okay, we're gonna have to do that again. We're going to change the lighting, and it's like, okay, that sucks, because it's going to take 15 minutes just to get it right, and then you do it again, and it's like, okay, cool. The sight and sound stuff, well, I will say, I do love that, because it is, we're doing like a music video, essentially, but it's all, we're recording and making music, so it's like, oh, it's not a photo shoot, it's not a video shoot, it's like, oh, we're recording, we're doing a performance. That I love.
Yeah.
It's like the lip sync. Did you lip sync? I assume you lip synced, right?
Yeah.
All that stuff. I'm like, oh man, I don't love that stuff. I may have loved it if I was younger, like if I was in my 20s, you know. But as I get older, I'm like, oh man, it's a process to do that for me. But it's important, and I love when I see a good music video done, because that video was so cool, and it just, and you know, it looked like it was done in a way that was light and fun and cool, and everybody had a good time. But it's like, I also know that it probably took you 6 hours to get it all done, and you know, from start to finish, to loading in, to getting, you know, it's like, it's a whole day basically.
Yeah. It's a good chunk of a day for sure.
People don't realize how much time it takes to make a music video. That's why it's like I also want to talk about it, because there's a lot of time that musicians put into this, and it's not like doing a gig. You know what I mean? So, but let's play something else. What are you going to play next?
Let's play Sunshine of Your Love.
All right. And this is a Cream cover, right?
Yeah, it's a Cream cover.
All right. Here's Sunshine of Your Love by Electric Soul Parade.
Been waiting so long.
so badass. Where is he? Travis, you're hiding from us, dude. Where are you, bro? Let's see. Let's see where he's at. Hold on. Hold on. I'm going to have to text him. Travis, where are you, dude? Where'd you go, dude?
It just kicked me out for some reason, but I got right back in, and they said I was backstage. So
okay. All right. We lost you for a second. I came back, and I was like, man, that was so kick-ass. It was just me talking to myself, dude.
No, I could hear you.
Hey, just so you know, for an interview, you need to show up, dude. That's half of it. I can't do an interview if you're not there for me to interview you, dude.
I've been sitting right here the whole time, brother. I think it's your shoddy internet, man.
No, it's not me, dude. It's not me. But you know what's funny? I was looking at your post earlier today when it said when it's Dad Career Day and he brings in his EP. I almost lost it when I saw that, dude. Oh, Travis, you are such a funny motherfucker, dude. Like, seriously, you and I played in a country band with Brian Lawless and country rock band, and it was so fun to kind of do a country music festival. You guys should be playing festivals and doing stuff. Where are you guys playing next? Are you wanting to play in the LA scene more? Are you wanting to go outside the LA scene? Tell me what your scope is on playing live with this band.
Yeah, I would love to be playing live more. I just don't know how to make it profitable. And I don't make any money when I'm playing in LA. So that's the thing is, you know, I pay my guys, and so if I pay my guys and then I pay for rehearsal space and I pay like a photographer or something, you know, I'm out $500
right
for a gig, and you know, I might make 40.
Well, you know, clubs suck. I mean, I will say the clubs, the way the payment structures are, they're whack. I did a house concert this weekend where I didn't have to bring anybody. They kind of did everything. They had, like, basically a party. And I was like, man, this is where it's at. Like, I wish there was a space that we could throw house concerts or house parties at. And I would never do that in my own home just because I just don't want that many people at the house. But it's like, man, it's such a great kind of communal experience. And there were three artists on the bill, and I was like, this is actually something. Like, it could be something. It's like almost better to invite people to a house party than to a club. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where like there were drinks there that, like, there were alcoholic drinks, there were non-alcoholic drinks, there was food, all for $20. And it's like, wait a minute, this is like so reasonable of a price to have when, you know, like, you go to a club and one drink is $20 now. You know what I mean?
Dude, you know, it's like, yeah, you pay $30 to get in and you pay $20 for a drink. And you're at $50, man, just to see a local band. Yeah, so anyways, I mean, thing is, dude, yeah, I would love to be playing live and, like, festivals. You know, I just haven't made the right connections, or I haven't, like, crack the code.
Well,
you know,
we played the whiskey together, and like that was profitable. It's like everybody made money when we did that. But it's it was so much work. That's the part I'm like, man, when you play like a local club, they're doing a lot of that work. You know what I mean? But I mean, that it was also cooler when we played the whiskey because it was like we had the whole night, the whole club. It was just, that was really like a really super fun gig. That was. And I want to get us back in there again and do something like that again. But they're just having a lot of cover bands in there. Like, it's like the scene is changing because they're not making money on booze in the same way. So it's like they're trying to just get numbers in there in any way they can. And even, you know, like the Mint, I played on Friday. And it's like, you know, like every person that sits in a booth has to pay $25 on food and drinks just to sit and enjoy the coffee they just spent $30 on, you know? So it is everything that you're saying. It's like, it's a grind and a hustle for everybody on all sides of the gun. But there's something also so great about people coming to a club, playing music together. You're putting it out there, and it could lead to something. You never know who's in the room listening. You never know who's in the room, period. And that's like, I realize more and more, like, that's why I play out. Like, I just don't ever want to stop playing. As much as I grumble about it, and I do grumble about it, like, when I actually do it, I was just telling another artist, it's like, every gig I drive to, I'm like, ah, man, I don't want to do this right now. I just want to stay home and watch a movie. And then I finish the gig and I'm like, man, that was why I do this. Like, there's like something that feels good in the heart and soul when you create something and you give to a community of people, locals or friends or family or people that didn't know that this is how you play or this is how you sing or this is the, these are the songs you write. There is something that, like, you uncover a little bit of your soul, and I love that. That's the part of it where I'm like, this is why I do it. But yes, I totally agree with you. There's a grind with playing out. But you guys should be
100%.
You guys should be playing out all the time. You really should. Like, you're a talented band. You guys are great, and you're great. And it's like, you should be playing out.
I agree. I 100% agree, dude. And I'm just in the middle of the shit.
Yeah.
I'll figure it out.
So you're doing a record. Like, it's like you're in the middle of doing a record. How could you think about playing out? Like, I totally get that. Let's talk about Sunshine of Your Love. Tell me why you picked that song to cover.
Man, it's like Cream is one of my favorite bands. It's like a 60s anthem. And I think there's a lot of younger people that probably never even knew that song, heard that song.
Right.
You know, and it's just trying to introduce that to, like, maybe some people who haven't heard it. Plus, I just thought we could do a cool version of it and, you know, do our own kind of thing. I mean, it's the same arrangement and everything. I dropped it down a half step. And then, put some double guitars in the chorus and things to like thicken it up. And, I thought the band, played their asses off. They nailed it. And, I was really happy with how it all turned out, man.
Yeah. And it
video
sounded
too. I thought the video,
your guitar tone, everything sounded so awesome. In fact, I remember calling you afterwards and I was like, dude, I love that you quoted Blue Moon, and you were like, dude, that's what Clapton does. And I was like, I forgot he did that. I forgot that Clapton quoted that because it just sounded new when you did it. It was like, oh, it was such a cool quote. You quoted his quote. You know what I mean? It was like you quoted the thing that he did, but you did it in such a tasteful way that made it sound new to me. It really did. It sounded totally new. It was great. I loved it.
Well, thanks, dude. He's one of my favorites, especially that era of his playing with Cream.
Yeah.
And but it's really honestly next to impossible to copy him exact. His timing is so unique.
Weird.
You know, so
it's, I feel like, and you agree with this. It's like it's never on top. It's always like almost dragging, and it's so brilliant. Like, it's almost like he just is still thinking about what he's playing to the very last moment till he actually has to play it. And I'm envious of that because it's just like, dude, his timing is like so laid back and it's just so killer as a result. But then when he does like a big lick, and he always does, I don't know if you notice this, so every time I learn one of his solos, I'm like, I never would have put that lick there. Like, I would never have put the fingering of that lick there, and he does that. Like, he just chooses a very unique placement of whatever the chord or whatever the lick he's going to play or the inversion of the pentatonic scale, and he does it in this very peculiar place. It's not root position pentatonic. I've never really seen him do that. He doesn't do that. It's mostly like third position, fourth position. Do you notice that when you've learned his solos? Like, he just doesn't do a lot of stock stuff?
Well, yeah. I mean, the timing is the big thing, but I think that's why he got the nickname Slow Hand.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because he's so patient. He's never in a hurry. And yeah, he's always like, oh, like the last second where it's like almost out of time, but it's still there. It's fucking brilliant, man.
No, one of my favorite clips is him playing Crossroads with Mayer. I don't know if you've seen it. It's Good Morning America, John Mayer, my buddy Dave Ron Harris, who you probably met, and Clapton and the whole band, J.J. Johnson, all these guys just jamming on Crossroads. And Mayer's just slaying it with his solo. And Clapton's just like taking the punches, like just like taking the punches. And then Clapton solos and annihilates him with two notes. And I was just like, man, like it was, you just see Mayer just throwing any lick he can at him. And he just kills him. He destroys him with two licks. And you know what? The crazy thing is I just heard him talking about B.B. King. And he said, B.B. King would annihilate you with one note. And I was like, that's true. He would. He would annihilate you with one note. And like Clapton, to me, is the two-note killer. Like B.B. King, there's nobody that's going to beat B.B. King. He's the one-note killer. But I feel like Clapton's the two-note killer because he annihilated every part of Mayer's solo with two notes. And I was like, this is why this guy's a master. Like I steal it. And it's like, it's not replicated because it's just the timing of where he plays it. It's like, it was his response. That's what made it so brilliant. It was his response to how he did it. So I love that you covered this song because it is one of the greats. Disraeli Gears, one of the best records ever made. And they didn't make another one because they just kind of parted ways after that, right? They just did one record, right?
Well, no, they did. After that, they did Wheels of Fire. But that was, it's like half studio, half live record.
Yes. That's the one with the Crossroads on it.
Yeah, that's the one that has the live version of Crossroads.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know that record as well. I know Disraeli Gears really well. I'll have to get that other record too, because that's one of the classic Cream records.
But Wheels of Fire is the shit, dude.
I need to get that. I don't have that. But I'll get it. I'll get it, bro. Don't worry. Let's play another one of your songs. What are we playing next?
Well, we can play That Feeling, and I'll give a little introduction. So this, you introduced me to Doug, or you told me to go to see Doug Messenger.
Yeah.
And this was the first song we did with Doug. And this was the first time I had ever recorded to tape. So we did the rhythm tracks, guitar, bass, and drums live. And then I overdubbed the vocal and the solo.
I was there.
And we recorded it in one day.
I was there for the solo. I remember that.
That's right. You were there and you told me to pick that take.
Yeah. Yeah. There was actually, you were in between takes and you were actually tracking the takes. And there was one part of your solo where you did this like, you did like this, you know, kind of like circular thing. I was like, you gotta do that lick in the solo for sure. And you're like, you think? And I was like, oh my God, it's what's on the record. But I remember watching you do it and it was just like, oh my God, it was killer. And you went between like two ideas. You had two concepts, maybe three concepts for the solo, but the one way you went with is just insane, dude. It's one of your best guitar solos on a record for sure. I definitely think it's one of the best guitar solos you play.
Yeah, this is me. This is me going full shred.
Yes. All right. Well, let's play it. Here's Electric Soul Parade with That Feeling. We'll be right back.
house and now your castle won't be around. Your mind is racing in the middle of the night. You got that feeling it's something ain't right. Surrender to the fight. You get that feeling, everything is all right. It's that feeling. It's that feeling. It's that feeling that will lead you to the light. It's that feeling. It's that feeling. It's that feeling that will lead you to the light.
You know what it was? It was the lick right before you did the Eddie Van Halen kind of finger picking thing. It was that lick. I remember.
Yeah.
Dude, that solo is so insane, dude. It's just, and I've seen you play live. I saw you play it with Live at the Whiskey. I remember. I had a question for you. My question is there a concept behind you walking? Like you always start with the videos with a guitar laying up against your amp. There must be a concept of you like, you now have to do this in every location. It has to be a part of every video now. You've done it twice.
Well, I didn't do it in Sunshine of Your Love. But I've done it in three of the videos. Yeah, I don't know. I just, thought it would be cool for That Feeling, which was the first one that we shot.
Right.
And then I think it's kind of Tyler's idea. He's like, hey, man, like, why don't you let me get a shot of you like walking up to the amp and like picking up the guitar, and then I'll do it, you know, and then
we'll just
leave it in there. So we did it for That Feeling. We did it for Make Up Your Mind. We did it for Johnny B. Good, which we didn't play, but yeah.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, dude, Travis, where can people find you if they want to find you online, they want to find your music, they want to find you out in the world?
Any kind of social media platform. My band is Electric Soul Parade, just like it sounds. You can find us on YouTube, Instagram, TikTok, Bandcamp, or our website, electricsoulparade.com. If you want to find me, Travis Lee Stevenson, my last name is Stephenson. You can find me on Instagram, TikTok, Bandcamp as well, YouTube. So, yeah, all the handles are the same. And, yeah, shoot me a message. Say hey.
Amazing. And when's your next single or song coming out or record?
I don't have a date. I apologize, but I don't have a date. I've released three singles. I know. Kick my ass. I've put out three singles, so hopefully that can tie people over for a minute until like I get my financial shit together and I can finish mastering the record and put it out.
Yes.
Well, with the but yeah, I mean, if you're following me, either me or my band, on social media, I'm definitely going to announce that. It's going to be my life's work finally materializing in this 3D reality.
Yeah, man. Well, dude, it sounds great as always, and always love playing music with you. Always love hanging with you, and always love going on the road with you too, man. Because, dude, what was your nickname? Was it Peanut? No, it wasn't Peanut. What was your nickname?
No, Meat Waffle.
Meat Waffle, dude. That's right. What was mine? What was my nickname, dude?
I can't remember, dude. Oh,
man, Meat Waffle. That's right, dude.
Meat Waffle. Yes.
That's the best. Well, dude, on behalf of Travis, myself, and Sam, check out Travis and his music at Electric Soul Parade. His band's one of my favorites. He's one of my favorite guitarists in this city. Check out his music, and we'll see you guys next week. Peace, love, hair grease, we out. All right, Travis.
You're listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.